Thanks, guys. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, April 10th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemire.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Two former Air Zimbabwe officials convicted of criminal abuse of office have been sentenced to 10 years in prison.
Justice has taken its course, and the custodial sentence is a good message. Unfortunately, I think this is just a drop in the ocean in terms of fighting corruption.
The opposition MDC, led by Morgan Tsvangirai, insists that it won't participate in any election in Zimbabwe until the government institutes electoral reforms.
All members of the National Executive and all the 120 or so members of the National Council unanimously agreed to uphold the resolution, or one of the key resolutions, of our fourth National Congress.
And South African Home Affairs Minister Malusi Gigaba tries to ease tensions in the country's townships and squatter camps following fresh incidents of xenophobic attacks.
That the South African government regrets what is happening, we apologize to the people concerned in their countries, and we are taking all the steps to address this.
Two former Air Zimbabwe officials convicted of criminal abuse of office yesterday were today sentenced to 10 years in prison. Former Chief Executive Officer Peter Chikumba and former Company Secretary Grace Fumbizai were found guilty of engaging in fraudulent aviation insurance deals that prejudiced the airliner of $10 million. They will serve 7 years each after the magistrate suspended 3 years on condition of good behavior. Air Zimbabwe is one of several government parastatals reeling from a deep culture of corruption. But does this sentence send any message to others plundering the economy? Studio 7's Ntunga Milinkomo posed that question to economic analyst Masimba Gujera.
Justice has taken its course, and the custodial sentence is a good message. Unfortunately, I think this is just a drop in the ocean in terms of fighting corruption. In as much as it is a high-sounding message, I think it's just a drop in the ocean. With the factional politics going on in the ZANU-PF, one may not be surprised to learn that these were probably in the wrong basket, as the president would want to put it, and therefore they've been caught on the wrong side of the law. There are a number of other corrupt and alleged corrupt individuals who either still have their jobs, have their salaries, or have not even been arraigned before any court of law. So if this is the new page for government, then it's welcome, but I doubt it.
What message does this development send to current Air Zimbabwe executives?
These allegations of corruption and so on have been going on for a very long time. And these two, in as much as they are complicit in the issue of corruption, I don't think they are the biggest two people involved in corruption.
That was economic analyst Masimba Kuchera on the line with Studio 7's Ntunga Milinkomo from Harare.
The opposition movement for democratic change formation, led by Morgan Tsvangirai, has upheld its Congress resolution that it will not participate in any election in the country until the government institutes electoral reforms. The party's National Council and National Executive met at the MDCT's Harvest House headquarters in Harare and unanimously agreed to continue the boycott. President Robert Mugabe has proclaimed June 10 as the date for by-elections in 14 parliamentary seats that fell vacant after MDCT recalled 21 legislators who had defected. The recalled members are challenging the constitutionality of the move. MDCT spokesman Obet Gutu told Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that there is no going back on their demands for reforms.
All members of the National Executive and all the 120 or so members of the National Council unanimously agreed to uphold the resolution, or one of the key resolutions of our fourth National Congress, that the party is not going to participate in any elections until those key electoral reforms have been undertaken.
But Mr. Gutu, your critics will say, since you started these boycotts of by-elections, nothing seems to be moving. Shouldn't you be doing more?
We are actually doing a lot of work on the ground. It is a pity that maybe our critics might not be aware of the amount of work that we are doing in the communities. We are reaching out to our supporters in the various constituencies. In fact, throughout the length and breadth of Zimbabwe, we had reports tabled before the National Executive by the various provincial representatives. And I'm very excited to confirm that each and every one of the 12 provinces of the country, and also including the three external provinces of the USA, South Africa, and UK, Ireland, are actually busy mobilizing, reaching out to both existing supporters and also potential supporters, explaining to them party programs, also explaining to them the reasons why we had to adopt that resolution that says we are not going to participate in elections whose results are predetermined by the ZANU-PF regime through their rigging machinery.
That was MDCT spokesman Obet Gutu speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
South African Home Affairs Minister Malusi Gigaba has moved in to try and ease tensions in the country's townships and squatter camps following fresh incidents of xenophobic attacks. Reports from Durban say over 1,000 foreigners have fled their homes and are seeking refuge at police stations following violent attacks from South Africans. Police said no deaths had been reported since the violence rocked the eastern port city last weekend. Locals and African immigrants in South Africa often compete for scarce jobs, making them a target for violence and intimidation. Some foreigners are blaming the attacks on Zulu King Goodwill Zwelithini and President Jacob Zuma's first-born son, Edward, who are accused of publicly attacking foreigners and saying they must leave South Africa. King Zwelithini, though, now says he was misquoted by the media.
In 2008, 62 people were killed in xenophobic violence in Johannesburg townships. Gigaba last night addressed the members of the diplomatic corps and promised that his government will take action against these attacks.
We will not leave any stone unturned in trying to dig deep into this problem and find out exactly what is happening. And so I want to assure you, as eminent representatives of your heads of states and government in our country, that the South African government regrets what is happening. We apologize to the people concerned and their countries, and we are taking all the steps to address this and to try and find the root cause of all of it and try to eliminate it, and in the process to implement better programs of integration so that foreign nationals in South Africa can live in peace, particularly asylum seekers and refugees who cannot run away from problems in their own home countries only to come to South Africa and be subjected to violence and insecurity once again.
Gigaba also urged South African traditional and political leaders to desist from stoking tensions.
I want to make a plea, which I have done before, and to repeat it, that political, religious, traditional community and other leaders in South Africa must desist from making remarks which are reckless and could result in loss of human life. It doesn't matter what drives you at that particular moment. Leaders in our country must refrain from making comments which could result in loss to human life. The international community must not view South Africa as a xenophobic and Afrophobic country. And Africa in particular must not think that we hate fellow Africans so much that we are prepared to do the worst to cause them harm. South Africa belongs to Africa first and foremost. And when all is said and done, we are an African country.
Meanwhile, organizations representing foreign nationals and other civic society movements and activists in South Africa have condemned the current xenophobic attacks taking place in KwaZulu-Natal and called on the government to stop the attacks with immediate effect. The wife of former Speaker of the National Assembly, Maxi Sisulu, criticized President Robert Mugabe and Jacob Zuma for failing to publicly denounce the current acts of xenophobia during their televised address yesterday and today.
Zimbabwe celebrates 35 years of independence on April 18. Starting Monday, Studio 7 will highlight some of the country's achievements and failures. Don't be left out. Send us a text or voice message on WhatsApp. Our number is 001-202-465-0318. You can also send us a message on Twitter, Facebook, and email. Our email address is studio7@voanews.com. The email address again, studio7@voanews.com.
Harare Street vendors who were supposed to be relocated to new trading sites today breathed a sigh of relief as the local authority did not take action as promised. The city council had indicated that it will relocate vendors to 10 vending sites that will accommodate about 6,000 of the 100,000 street vendors in an attempt to decongest the central business district. National Vendors Union Zimbabwe Director Samuel Wadzai told Studio 7 they were not sure why the council did not carry out its relocation plans.
Nothing is happening on the ground. Our members are conducting their business as usual. Actually, to be frank with you, my brother, there is calmness, there is order, shocking levels of order. We have not seen these levels of order ever since we started to advocate for the protection of vendors. We don't know if it has any implications, but there is tranquility in the city of Harare at the moment. Our members are conducting their businesses as usual, it's business as usual. We don't know what it means. Probably they have postponed the program because we made it very clear to them that this is not workable, this is premature, and you need to be informed, you need to know what is happening on the ground before you implement such a far-reaching exercise.
But are you satisfied with the 10 identified sites?
We are not, definitely we are not. That's why we are refusing to be part and parcel of this process. That's why we have condemned the manner in which they want to implement it. There are a lot of loopholes. People want just to rush because there are some corrupt elements who want to benefit from this process.
That was National Vendors Union Zimbabwe Director Samuel Wadzai in Harare. Studio 7 failed to reach Town Clerk Tendai Mahachi for a comment.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930-5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
National Media Inquiry tackles disability issues.
And will the women's soccer team, the Mighty Warriors, qualify for the All Africa Games? Stay tuned for more details.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A suicide car bomber targeted a convoy of U.S. forces in eastern Afghanistan today. Officials say 4 civilians were killed and 12 others wounded.
Cuban and American officials say U.S. President Barack Obama and his Cuban counterpart Raul Castro spoke by telephone ahead of an expected historic encounter at the summit of the Americas beginning Friday in Panama City.
Members of the Syrian government and some opposition groups ended talks today in Russia with no signs of progress on how to end the four-year civil war.
And the Red Cross says it has made its first shipment of emergency medical aid to Yemen, where a Saudi-led campaign of airstrikes shows no sign of letting up.
The Information and Media Panel of Inquiry, or IMPI, recently submitted a report to Information, Media and Broadcasting Services Minister Professor Jonathan Moyo with several recommendations aimed at improving media operations in Zimbabwe. Such inquiries normally leave out issues related to the needs of people living with disabilities. But this one looks different, as our correspondent Safari Njema reports.
The comprehensive report handed over to Professor Moyo is expected to recommend the implementation of appropriate policies to cater for gender and disability issues. The 25-member panel of inquiry, which included editors from the print and broadcasting sectors, media trainers and artists, said they were sensitized about disability issues when they spoke to people in various parts of the country. News editor of the Zimbabwe Independent, Dumisani Muleya, who was a member of the outreach team, says he is confident that media coverage will change if the findings of the inquiry are implemented.
What this process has done is it has raised awareness among us, such that when things of that nature come before us, we are always going to be sensitive to that, because we realize that the broader population is very sensitive to that. So it was quite a learning curve for us as well.
Renowned broadcaster and executive director of Voice of the People, John Masuku, is that the broadcasting sector should take note of the views of people with disabilities as reflected in the IMPI report if it is to have an impact on people with disabilities.
I think if people have expressed that dismay that people with disabilities are not being covered, then the onus is on us as broadcasters to ensure that we increase those programs. Because the value of the report is that it is giving us the input of the people. And what the people have said, I think, should be respected.
A member of the Zimbabwe Media Commission, Chris Mike, says it was commendable that the panel, which started its nationwide tour in April last year, took some time to interact with people with disabilities. He says, very often, the media forgets that such people have a story to tell, just like everyone else.
IMPI was about getting people's voices, not just the experts, but also ordinary people in communities and also specific interest groups, including people living with disabilities. And therefore, it would have been more gratifying to hear those voices coming out, particularly at the launch.
News editor at ZFM Stereo, Kelvin Jakachira, says IMPI has set an important yardstick on how the broadcasting sector should report on disability issues. He argues that media policymakers should ensure people with disabilities are given equal space as anyone else.
And I want to encourage those that make policies in the media to ensure that our colleagues who are living with disabilities are accorded the same opportunities as anyone else.
Chairperson of the Tracy Nyakupinda Albino Foundation, Shingirai Nyakupinda, believes that the media should take note of the views of people with disabilities expressed during IMPI's outreach programs. He says such people have a right to be heard.
They should play a certain role which can actually determine the content that's going to be published or that's going to be aired, not only in circles pertaining to disability only, but issues which are of national interest.
Media lecturer Admire Masuku adds that IMPI should continue to interact with media organizations to help them appreciate some of the issues in the report.
The powers that be that foresaw the IMPI inquiry should educate those who are in charge of or in control of media in Zimbabwe to ensure that they also appreciate some of the concerns that were raised by people.
Masuku says government should come up with a policy to ensure media schools in the country train more journalists with disabilities.
Newsrooms and radio stations or all media practitioners also make an effort to also include practitioners with disabilities in their newsrooms to promote more coverage of these issues, because they will be talking from a point of experience rather than people who are just writing for the sake of writing.
There are high expectations that the IMPI recommendations on these and other media issues will be fully implemented to ensure every Zimbabwean has access to the media and play a crucial role in promoting democracy, human rights, and various freedoms. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, I am Safari Njema.
Meanwhile, here Zimbabwe, an initiative of women in technology, today held a panel discussion looking at the experiences of leading women in Zimbabwe's media. The panel featured women from the print and broadcast media. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo speaks to her Zimbabwe operation manager, Natasha Msonza, who explains the key resolutions of the panel.
Recently, we saw the licensing of 8 radio stations, something that has been received by many people as a positive move by the government to free the airwaves. But then does this offer more opportunities for media practitioners in terms of employment and diversification into new sectors?
What were some of the challenges that the panelists pointed out?
What stood out for me especially was an offering from Thelma that the issue of sexual harassment still remains a big deal in newsrooms. She spoke from a very personal experience, but she also says that as an editor now, she still gets, you know, young women approach her for advice and with complaints, and it's really hard to address. But at the same time, while that problem still exists, there's a realization that it's kind of not as bad as before, because there's a lot of awareness raising that's been happening, especially with male journalists. And then the other big issue that stood out for me is what Thelma also described as the artificial glass ceiling. So these can be like things that exist in your mind when you just doubt yourself, and this is a common thing, especially with aspiring women journalists.
And looking at some of the resolutions that you might have made, what were the key highlights and what women are saying they will do moving forward?
Yeah, there was a submission from the audience, actually, people requesting that newsrooms probably need to partner with tertiary institutions and bring the empowerment to that level.
That was her Zimbabwe Operations Manager, Natasha Musonza, speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
Chomba Normandio, Chomba Normazepa.
My experience in Mozambique was very tough, very tough. As tiny as I was, I found myself being chosen to train as a military instructor, and I did very well. I was very good at shooting. Patriarchy in terms of how we look at women and men is still very prevalent. We are the very same people who in that liberation struggle talking about women emancipation, but at the same time, we are the women who in the liberation struggle having to be looked down upon by the very same men who are in influential positions.
That was parliamentarian Irene Zindi, who participated in Zimbabwe's liberation struggle at a tender age. She says life was tough in training camps in Mozambique. Don't miss this interview tomorrow here on Studio 7.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
ZANU-PF spin doctors this week went on overdrive, basking in the glory of what state media described as mega deals that were a culmination of President Robert Mugabe's visit to South Africa. For a country in the throes of a crippling economic meltdown, the news of 3 bilateral agreements and a memorandum of understanding between the 2 neighboring countries sounded like very good news indeed. But skeptics were quick to water down the news, pointing out to previous experiences where Mr. Mugabe signed several so-called mega deals with China, but all has come to naught. Independent economic commentator Daniel Ndlela breaks down the deals for us.
Bi-national commissions simply means that perhaps on an annual basis or bi-annual basis, the leaders will meet and chat about things. That does not really translate into some substantive economic or social progress. The next one, diplomatic consultations. Definitely, we always have diplomatic consultations at SADC level, at AU level, at United Nations level. These are terrible general things. About water, we don't even understand where this priority came from, because we really need deals in things like trade and investment. Deals that will translate into bringing something into Zimbabwe in terms of actually kick-starting this economy that is moribund. And South Africa is well-placed. It is actually sending a lot of investment in the African continent. We are bypassed by South African investment, by the way, and yet, in fact, we are close, and we could actually benefit a lot with transport infrastructure. That is, those are the deals that would have happened.
That was independent economic commentator Daniel Ndlela speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. We also reached South African-based political commentator Zenzo Nkomo, who says South African business people are not keen in investing in Zimbabwe because of the country's controversial black economic empowerment laws.
I think people are a bit hesitant. They will go, but not as high maybe as we would expect an influx. For example, we mustn't expect that there will be an influx of investors from South Africa to Zimbabwe. But maybe in the long term, depending also what the government of Zimbabwe is really intending to do, because if you look at the economic situation, it's not really a good one. It's becoming bleak by day.
That was political commentator Zenzo Nkomo, who spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Johannesburg in South Africa.
In sports, Zimbabwe's Mighty Warriors are on the verge of making history when they take on the Black Queens of Ghana at Rufaro Stadium on Sunday. Our reporter Michael Kariati has more details.
The Mighty Warriors only need to win 1-0 to sail through to the All Africa Games finals to be hosted by Congo Brazzaville in September after scoring a very important away goal in their first leg 2-1 defeat to the Black Queens at the Accra National Sports Stadium. A win of over 1-0 margin will be a bonus if the away goal they scored will count for two should the Mighty Warriors win 1-0 and the two teams are tied 2-2 on aggregate. To ensure massive support for the Mighty Warriors, the Deputy Minister of Sports, Arts and Culture, Tabitha Kanengoni, has requested the Premier Soccer League to cancel a game between Dynamos and Flame Lily at Gwandura Stadium, as she feels it is a counter attraction for the Mighty Warriors.
The Mighty Warriors are a national team. They are representing Zimbabwe as a whole. So the focus should be on supporting a national team together.
To boost the support base of the Mighty Warriors, the Zimbabwe Football Association has decided to charge $1 for the cheapest seat to attract a huge crowd. After Zimbabwe's failure to qualify for the Africa Women's Championships and the World Cup, qualification to the All Africa Games is the first step towards the revival of women's football, according to Miriam Sibanda, the president of the Zimbabwe Women's Soccer League.
So this would be the start of our restoration, as it were, revival of women football, and we hope it's a start.
The Mighty Warriors, however, should be warned to guard against complacency, as only last year they failed to qualify for the Africa Women's Championships after a disappointing home draw against the Chipolopolo Queens of Zambia. At the same time, there are some Premier Soccer League games lined up for the weekend. Top of the league table, Triangle host Capes United. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Kariati.
Thank you, Michael. Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will be talking with you listeners and experts about moves by ZANU-PF, a faction calling itself ZANU-PF People First, to field former Vice President Joyce Mujuru in the 2018 presidential election.
Now to recap today's top stories.
Two former Zimbabwe officials convicted of criminal abuse of office yesterday were today sentenced to 10 years in prison.
The opposition MDC formation led by Morgan Tsvangirai insists that it won't participate in any election in the country until the government institutes electoral reforms.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemire.
And I'm Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.